Several years ago, we were able to find a connection using an MRI about how gratitude impacts the brain. And what has been found is that your brain's functions are enhanced and your mental order is increased when you have gratitude. And that got me thinking, as we're coming up on the 4th of July and Independence, what things do we have to be grateful for?
The Family Freedom Podcast. Voices of Family and Freedom. Now here's your host, Wendy Hart.
So today I am joined by Stacy Thornton. She is a mom of five. She's been teaching the Principles of Liberty classes to community groups for about 7 years and is the co-founder of the Liberty Moms. So welcome, Stacy.
Thank you.
Stacy, you and I have talked briefly about the Battle of Brooklyn, and this is a battle from the Revolutionary War. So again, very apropos for the 4th of July coming up. And it actually happened in 1776, did it not?
Right. Yep, in August.
In August. So we signed the Declaration in July, and then in August is this Battle of Brooklyn. So kind of give me the setup. Tell me about the Battle of Brooklyn and see how this makes us grateful, right?
Well, I think one of the things that's really interesting about this battle is that it's the colonists had just kind of run the British out of Boston, and they were... You know, they felt pretty good about that, but they knew, George Washington knew, that the next place that the British would go would be to New York. And so he had sent some of his generals up there they built a fort, Fort Sterling, and they tried to be prepared for that battle. They had about 15,000 troops, if I'm right, and George Washington ended up splitting them, which turned out to be a mistake, and took about 7,500, and eventually, when they got into trouble, they got 1,500 more. So they had about 9,000 troops on Long Island.
And it's actually an island, right, for those of us who...
Yeah, it's interesting when you really look at that area in New York, because there's New York, there's the Hudson River, there's the East River, and then there's Long Island. These troops are there on Long Island, but what happens is the British... who they have like 400 ships. The Americans don't have any ships. Right. They have boats. They don't have any ships.
They have little canoes.
fishing boats. So they have like 400 ships that could sail through and intercept anybody. They had 32,000 troops that were like on Staten Island. The problem is the ways in which the British could maneuver and get over to Washington's army. Washington had blocked some of the ways, but there was one pass called the Jamaica Pass. General Howe had about 20,000 troops went through that pass, intercepted the few soldiers that were there to guard it, and were able to just get through and divide and work around until they had Washington trapped on three sides. So three sides, and his only other option is the East River.
So he's basically surrounded. He has no... And I think it's important to interject here that the way that the Americans usually won was they would attack and they'd run away, right? They bravely ran away.
Yeah.
So, because they didn't have the power. Yeah, they didn't have the power to defeat the British head to head. And so, so General Howe has them completely surrounded on three sides, and then the East River, and what you said about the Navy, right? The British Navy, they got a river, they can go, they got boats, they have cannons.
Right, so Washington's only left with retreat. He can fight, his generals are saying, we fight, we die, mm-hmm. We retreat, we have a little bit of hope, and he's wondering, is that even possible? Because they have some cannon and artillery as well, and they're trying to figure out how they can possibly do it, but they decide that's what they're going to do, and luckily, they have a regiment that is very good with their boats. They're saying, we will get you across the river. What happens is there starts to be a northeast wind that pushes those British Navy. They can't come forward. They're just sat at anchor in the harbor because the wind is too strong.
So they're trying to come up the river. And
they want to
that's
up.
What they want
to
do.
They come up the river and pass them off.
Right.
Yeah, and intercept them if they saw them. So they wait till the nighttime before they're going to try to get across. But of course, as soon as they know that's what's happening, they can just come in and intercept them. But they're stuck back at anchor. So that was a huge miracle in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But then what was interesting is, just like with everything, you have this wind. These poor rowers of the boats, they get across. They can get across easily, and they can put the people in the boats, but they're having a hard time rowing back because it's hard against the wind. And when they're just about ready to give up, the wind stops and actually shifts a bit and helps them row the people back. And they do it all night long, all night long, all night long. But by the time the sun is ready to rise, there's still 3,000 troops on that island. And once the British see that, they will be toast. And so the greatest thing is that there starts to be this thick, dense fog where they say you really could hardly see 5 feet in front of you. That's on the Long Island side of the river. And it's so dense that it also tempers the noise.
I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah, because they'd hear the noise. Yeah.
They would hear the noise. So it did that, and even though, you know, generally when the sun rises, the fog burns off.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But it didn't burn off. It didn't burn off until the last boat with Washington was rowing across the river, and then the fog lifted. Even, you know, Washington said that is from the hand of God that happened.
Well, and it's important to point out that in military maneuvers, a retreat is actually one of the most difficult things to do successfully. And part of the problem is that as you remove the reinforcements from behind, again, if the British had realized this, you have fewer and fewer troops to defend. And so it's basically a suicide mission to be one of those last few troops waiting. And my understanding is that the troops were kind of like tapped on the shoulder and said, come move back. And it was only when they got to the coast of the East River that they understood that they were actually in retreat. And they kept up the appearance that they were there, and they had fires and everything, so that the British had no idea that they weren't just undergoing a normal evening, just sitting quietly there waiting to be decimated the next day.
And Washington had all those concerns. That was his thing. It was like he thought it was a suicide thing for especially the people who were left behind. He was worried about all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those stories are the stories. We have a Patriot Camp every year, and that's a story that we tell the kids, because those are the things that you need to know, that these things happened for America. And I think that when we don't know those stories, like you say, if you never hear anything good and all the wonderful things that have happened in this country, how can you show your gratitude?
Right. The first time I heard about this was when I read David McCullough's 1776. And I love history, so I read all this stuff, and especially American history. And as I'm reading through this, I get to the Battle of Long Island. And I probably read this maybe 10 years ago. And I'm not that young anymore. And and it amazed me that in all of my life, I had never heard this story. My kids, of course, have heard the story so many times. They're like, yeah, yeah, Mom, Battle of Long Island, I get it. But most people have not. And then as I started researching it, I found out that this was not a unique occurrence at all in the Revolutionary War. And it's important to understand that the Revolutionary War went on for 8 years. It was just long and drawn out, and again, most of the time it was the Americans attacking and retreating, or the British attacking, but the Americans always had some line of retreat. I went through and I made a list, and I don't know that this is exhaustive, but there was Dorchester Heights. So in addition to the Battle of Brooklyn, these are miracles of weather: Dorchester Heights, White Plains, Trenton, Germantown, Valley Forge, Stony Point, and Cowpens, and then finally the Battle of Yorktown, which was the decisive victory. I know you say you're not an expert on Yorktown, but just to cover briefly some of it, what I've been able to come up with is that the British fleet was in New York, and they were headed to Yorktown, which is in Virginia. And again, the British fleet, they were like the masters of the waves.
Right.
You know, they were huge. That's why the whole Spanish Armada thing, you know, I mean, the British were I mean, you put them on a boat and you don't survive. I mean, that's kind of how it was.
So, was the world's best.
Yeah. Yeah, so the British fleet, they're in New York, and they're going to head down to Virginia to rescue Cornwallis in Yorktown, or support Cornwallis at Yorktown. And the date I have is September 5th, 1781. So they're getting ready to leave. The French come in and defeat the British. This is like the only time in that 400-year span on the waves that the British were defeated ever. One time.
Yeah. Right. And I read that they intercepted 19 British ships.
Wow.
So that is the miracle, right? And that the French came in and with 17,000 French and American troops surrounded Cornwallis. We wouldn't have been able to do it without the French.
Yeah, no, not at all.
About the miracle of getting them.
Yeah, because I know the French and the British, they had a long time history, but you know, these little upstarts there in America, who needs them?
Yeah.
Right? It's like why
they worked a long time to try to get the French.
Yeah,
to help
because
us.
The French, I mean, why would you, you're poking the bear, right? Why would you annoy the British? We're just kinda, yeah, let's just kinda leave them alone. So the French defeat the British September 5th, 1781. It's called the Battle of the Capes. And so the British, they have to make all these repairs to their fleet because obviously the French did significant damage. Washington goes down to Yorktown and they start what's called the Siege of Yorktown. And it's kind of the reverse of the Battle of New York because you've got Cornwallis trapped at Yorktown. He's got the York River on one side. And then Washington and the French are kind of surrounding and putting pressure on Cornwallis at Yorktown. But once the British get their fleet repaired, they still have time to head back. And so on October 13th, they're going to head back towards Yorktown to help Cornwallis and to support him. And guess what? Winds come up, throw one British battleship into another, cause damage. And so that delays the British coming down to rescue Cornwallis. And then on October 16th, Cornwallis, realizing that the fleet isn't coming to his rescue and feeling greater and greater pressure from Washington, he decides he's going to pull a Washington and he's going to retreat across the York River. So there's a historian, Thomas Fleming, that says, I'm going to read it. It says, about 10 minutes after midnight, a tremendous storm broke over the river. Within 5 minutes, there was a full gale blowing as violent from the descriptions in various diaries as the storm that had damaged the British fleet in New York. Shivering in the bitter wind, soaked to the skin, the exhausted soldiers and sailors returned to the Yorktown shore. Not until 2 a.m. did the wind moderate. It was much too late to get the rest of the army across the river. Glumly, Cornwallis ordered the guards and the light infantry to return. What's interesting about why was it important for Cornwallis to be there was because they were afraid if he escaped, then he could head up towards New York and join the British fleet. And he was thinking of leaving, you know, a lower level contingent there at Yorktown, but it wasn't a general, right? So by not having Cornwallis escape, you have a full-on British general that is forced to surrender to General Washington. And so even though the formal treaty isn't signed for like two more years, we look at Yorktown, that's essentially the end of it. So I'm constantly amazed at how those things played out, because we have the Battle of Brooklyn at the beginning. You know, they sign the declaration. That's like that. It's a declaration of war. I mean, there were skirmishes and you have Lexington and Concord and everything. But that was the formal, yes, we're declaring our independence. And the British really believed that they were going to be home by Christmas, having totally trounced the American upstarts.
And it should have happened, right? I mean, everybody understands why they thought that.
Yeah, well,
because they were just fighting farmers and shopkeepers.
Yeah, and this is literally the most powerful military on the planet at the time. And and I find it interesting, you've probably read this, that George Washington, when he was asked to lead the Continental Forces, he said something, I'm going to get it wrong, but he said something to the thing that I am not equal to the honor that has been granted to me. But he understood how completely overwhelmed he was. I mean, he understood militarily. This wasn't a bet you would want to take, is it?
No, that's right. I mean, can you imagine being him? I can't even imagine the responsibility, knowing what he knows and thinking about who he's going to be working with. You know, as I've read, they just weren't disciplined. They weren't, you know, some of them turned and went home, you know, because it was time to plant. I mean, it's amazing. And what I always think to myself, you know, I will be so grateful when I have an opportunity to thank him for his willingness to defend this country. But I am also going to thank those soldiers who nearly froze to death on more than one occasion, who had no food to eat, who really could have turned around and went, you know, gone home, who didn't, stayed. So you read about them, you know, at Valley Forge and at Morristown, just with barely anything to eat, you know, with just a little teeny blanket and just freezing weather. And I can think of myself kind of talking myself out of it, thinking, oh, just go home because this is a lost cause. And, you know, there were miracles that happened there as well. I think in Valley Forge, when they were just really starving, going to the river, trying to find something, you know, maybe some snails or something, and all of a sudden the river is filled with fish.
Yeah, I read about that. Yeah, it was like February. I mean,
Earlier than
normal. Yeah, so the shad, they come upstream. They're kind of like salmon, right? They come up the stream to spawn. Yeah. And that's not supposed to happen till spring. February is definitely not spring.
right. But it was when they were needed. Mm-hmm. And I think that those stories are just so important for us to remember, to be taught. First of all, to be taught.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can remember, so that we can know that, you know, really, God prevails. He's in charge. He knows, and he'll send help. And what a blessing that is.
Well, and you hear that from the founders quite a bit. Washington, you know, talks about divine providence a lot in his writings, if you go back. Madison does as well. And even, you know, you have that in the during the Constitutional Convention, you have Benjamin Franklin. How do we expect to build a nation without appealing to God to do so? Right. So they understood on a very real level that these things were happening, and that that there was no other explanation that they could come up with, because it didn't make sense. Washington says in his farewell address, I believe, quote that as well, because I love this. He says, "No people can be bound to acknowledge and adore the invisible hand." And by that, he's talking about God, the invisible hand which conducts the affairs of men more than the people of the United States. And when you think about that list where they had the miracles of, you know, swollen rivers where they escape and then the waters come in, and, you know, over and over again, I just recommend that everybody start looking into those because they're fascinating. He continues, he says, "Every step by which they have advanced to the character of an independent nation seems to have been distinguished by some token of providential agency." Every step.
I love that quote.
Yeah,
I love that quote. And I love the word adore.
Yes.
Acknowledge and adore the invisible hand. I think that's beautiful, and I think that's, you know, what we're missing today.
Yeah. And again,
the adoration,
but that ties back to the idea of gratitude. That in every situation that we're in, if we can look for why and where and how to be grateful, then that changes our perspective significantly. And I think, you know, back to what the MRIs are now confirming, I think it allows us to see more clearly, and we may act better because of the benefit of that gratitude.
I think you're right. I think that's so important. But, you know, we are always taught we need to remember. We need to remember the great things that have been done for us. And I always say you can only remember it if you're taught it.
That's true.
If you know it. Mm-hmm. And when these things are taken out of our learning, these younger kids, I feel like, I know that things have been shifting in education for a long time, but I feel like I did when I was younger, I feel like I was taught that these founders were wonderful. And I maybe was the last of the generation that was taught that. I don't know. But I know that it shifted when I was in high school. But I just think, you know, if we don't teach these things to our children, nobody else is going to. And they can't, I don't know if you know who Larry Arn is.
Hillsdale president.
Hillsdale president. But he said, you fight for that which you love, and you love that which you are taught to love. And we need to teach people about these beautiful experiences that have been had, that God's hand was over this nation. And then we need to teach why and what is expected of us.
Mm-hmm. Because it comes with responsibility, too. You don't just get something for nothing.
Right. And I think it's when we lose that responsibility, we also tend to lose that gratitude, because that's when we think things should be given to us and it should just be about us. But when you really work for something, you are grateful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I love about the Declaration, I mean, the language is beautiful. To start with such an overpowering, and we have to understand that at the time, this was such a unique perspective, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with unalienable rights. People didn't believe that. They believed in the divine right of kings. They didn't believe that you and I were every bit as worthy as King George or Alexander the Great or anything else. And then at the end of the Declaration, where he says, with firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And many of them did. Many of them gave their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And we forget that, I think, at our peril.
Well, I heard an interesting talk, and what was said was that they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And many of them did give their lives, and many of them did give their fortunes, but it wasn't until our day that we took from them their sacred honor.
Ooh.
And I thought that was powerful, thinking about what we have done to malign the founders in our day, what things have been said to strip them of their sacred honor, because I don't know very many people today that are willing to give up so much for a cause that is righteous.
That's true. Yeah, good. John Adams said at one point, he says, posterity, you will never know how much it cost the present generation to preserve your freedom. I hope you will make good use of it. If you do not, I shall repent in heaven that ever I took half the pains to preserve it. He was a little curmudgeonly, wasn't he?
yes, but that is true, I'm sure, and he probably is starting to feel that way.
But that's what I feel every year at this time. I remember him talking about, you know, we're going to celebrate with fireworks and we should be grateful, but also realizing what it cost him personally. And he didn't lose his life. I mean, the man didn't die until he was 81 years old, but it cost him so much personally, with his family, his separation, failing farm, finances, just that alone.
Right.
And to realize that he dedicated it himself so that we would have the ability to self-govern. And to, you know, fortunately he was able to live, you know, those 50 years past to be able to see some of the result, and that there was benefit to it. But it was not without a sacrifice.
Right, a huge sacrifice. Well, you were talking about how it used to be that people felt like, you know, there was a divine right to kings and that they weren't really in charge of their own lives. And it wasn't until this country where you realize that the emphasis is on the individual that we have individual rights that come from God, and that the very reason for government is simply to preserve those rights. That's the reason for it. And I was thinking when you were talking about that, that unfortunately we've kind of come to a place in our lives again where we, I think, have stopped realizing that we are the expert in our lives individually, and that there aren't experts out there that can give us all the answers and give us all, you know, everything we need, but that we are, as individuals, the experts in our own lives.
And that people fought and died to give us that ability to do just exactly that.
Yes, and how blessed we have been to live in this country when you consider that that type of freedom that, that we have had here is experienced by so few outside of our country.
Well, and especially and historically as well, right? If you go back to the beginning
especially
of recorded history, I mean, we're like a blip.
Yeah.
There's like this little drop of people that have had the ability of self-government to determine, you know, where we work, where we live, who we marry, how many kids we want to have. We need to appreciate that.
Right. Need to appreciate it. I think we really just need to just take it upon ourselves to self, to just begin to study again and learn about the founding of this country from original sources and teach it to our children and truly be grateful for what we've been given and to show that gratitude by our willingness to sacrifice some of our time to learn these things and to teach them to others. I think that's the answer, you know, to accept that responsibility ourselves and not depend upon people in office, whether they're local or federal or whatever, to save our country, because that's not where it's going to happen.
It's with the individual, as it always has been.
Right.
Great. Oh, thank you so much, Stacy. This has been fun.
Well, thank you.
This has been the Family Freedom Podcast with Wendy Hart. Follow this podcast, share with your friends and neighbors, and add to the Voices of Family and Freedom.